Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Our next guest, Neil Strauss, is an 8-time New York Times bestselling author and an award-winning Rolling Stone journalist. He joins us to discuss his new book. It's called The Truth, an eye-opening odyssey through love addiction, sex addiction, and extraordinary relationships. Oh boy, The Truth, says our guest, is a shockingly personal and brutally honest memoir that faces the terror of commitment and intimacy head on and discovers not just the hidden causes, but the controversial solutions. Neil Strauss, you may remember, wrote a book called The Game, in short, How to Be a Better Pickup Artist. And he sold 2.5 million copies of that book. But he's a man changed now, and in doing so, he has stepped up to tell us not how to be a better pickup artist, but how to be a better man.
And he better sell more than 2.5 million copies of this book.
Exactly, exactly. He's going to answer a few questions for us, like, why is it that we have a drive to be in a relationship, yet most relationships fail due to cheating, resentment, indifference, lack of passion, emotional abuse, oh, and the list goes on. Well, Neil Strauss, we're glad that you could be joining us on The Mountain Life. Welcome.
Thank you, Lynn and Tim. And you're right. Hopefully this is a wider audience than the game.
Yeah, sure. Right? There you go. We got to broaden it out and recognize and acknowledge our evolution and how there are more of us now than there were looking to become pickup artists. Neil, I got to ask you one thing, and we don't usually do this. I'm jumping in where Lynn asks the opening question. But for you, I have to say, on the cover of your book, it says, one of the 33 books everyone should read before turning 30. And I'm like, does that mean it's too late for us? Lynn and I are well beyond 30. How does this apply to us? Do you have to be under 30 to read your book?
It's the strangest thing. The Independent, the newspaper said that, and the book company put it on the cover. And I thought, you know what? It probably makes, to me, it's about intimacy and relationships and marriage. And so I think it's actually, I would almost think it's a book you have to read maybe after 23 or 24. So it's a strange thing to say, but I figured it would make everyone who's older feel, hey, I want to, you know, everyone wants to feel like they know what's going on. So I felt like it wouldn't hurt for people who are our age.
Us older, curious people will be drawn to that quote.
Exactly. It's such a strange thing to say, but I'll take it.
You'll take it. Well, Neil, tell us a little bit, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the game, what were you setting out to do with that book? And then how have you sort of evolved and transformed since then?
Yeah, and I'll give you a little bit of the journey, because I was listening to your introduction, obviously. So basically, the backstory is I was a writer for Rolling Stone and a writer for the New York Times, and I wrote about music. So I'd go to concerts, I'd write books about rock bands and go on the road with rock bands. So I was sort of in this sort of carnival of let's say decadence, we'll say. But I was very introverted, very lonely, and just wasn't the guy who either got dates, and if I did, they ended up with like a polite, you know, goodbye, is the best way to put it. And then a book editor came to me and said, hey, I found this secret community of pickup artists online. I'd love you to write a how-to book about it. And I said, you know, I'm a serious writer. I write for the New York Times. That's not the kind of things that, you know, I do. And then I secretly joined the community not to write about it because I was just so lonely. And I thought, maybe these guys have the answer.
So
ironic.
That is very ironic. So you sort of became a self-proclaimed expert at it, even though, you know, you wrote the book on it, even though you didn't consider yourself that person at all.
Right. And so, yeah, so here's kind of what happened. But it's interesting. The book is very mischaracterized everywhere, which is okay, which is fine. But what it actually was so I joined the community, and the characters in it, the people who are the self-described pickup artists, were so odd. I became a character in it over the course of it. And again, I'm not attractive. I'm 5'6". I'm way like under 130 pounds. Like, I'm a little scrawny, big nose guy, just to be honest, and bald. So I'm not like, you know, I'm not your typical, you know, guy who turns heads. But somehow I became voted the best pickup artist in that world, which is probably an infamy I'll never live down. And so I wrote a book about the journey, the good and the bad of it. The book actually is not a how-to, but it begins with the guy who's the greatest pickup artist trying to commit suicide. So it wasn't an advocacy of that lifestyle. It was sort of like, here's what they figured out about human nature, but here's the downside of, you know, manipulation and basing your life on the validation of other people. So it was a little bit of both, but it kind of definitely got characterized as a full-on lad's manual, which it was not intended to be.
Well, and it's interesting because it was amazingly successful. And I'm just wondering about, you know, you said you were an introvert, and yet you were in this world of extroversion and pickup artists. And do you think that there was something to that, that you had a unique perspective that you could apply? And maybe you were, what are your characteristics and your nature that led you to want to pursue and explore that and see what the story was all about?
I think, Tim, you really nailed it on two levels, and that's really the transition into the truth. But I will say, to speak to one thing you said, which is, here's how it worked as an introvert. A lot of these people were and are, maybe they come out of, you know, science and engineering, things like that, and they just figured out, oh, if you just do X, Y, and Z in this particular order, you're going to have a positive reaction. And that was easier to understand than just sort of trying to wing it or force it. So making it something that you could learn, like a playing guitar, and this is also the cynical negative side as well, of course, but making it something you could learn and practice made it appealing to someone who was, you know, shy. I could just focus that, hey, I'm out here to learn. And along the way, I get to meet people, many of whom are still in my life. So that was the good side of it. But the thing you hit on, Tim, is like what drew me to it. And that's really what the truth was about. So that all sounds fine and hunky-dory. Next thing you know, I'm in a relationship, hoping to have a future with this person, and I cheat on them. So in other words, I learned this stuff, and now I couldn't let it go. I just felt so bad about hurting her, operating outside my ethics and, you know, moral system, and just throwing away my chances of a happy future and a marriage and children that I've. So the truth begins where I checked into sex addiction rehab, and there I found a bunch of other people who were not maybe like the people we're reading about in the news, the people who just cheated on their – everyone actually in my group had cheated on their wife. They all seemed like good people, but they had this compulsion. And here's where it got fascinating. We all had something in common, and this is where my mind blew open and I knew I had to write the truth. Mm-hmm. Everyone had something in common, which is something called enmeshment. And this is also what drew me to the game. Have you ever heard that word before?
No.
I have.
Yeah, so this is fascinating. Gosh. There's like one thing to take away from this interview, both for you both and to people listening. So enmeshment is a type of upbringing. So abandonment, we all know what abandonment is. It's when a parent's either physically not there or emotionally not there for you, right? And it leads to a, you know, a certain pull of feeling unwanted or unlovable. Enmeshment is the opposite. So if a parent's not there to meet your needs, in enmeshment, you're meeting the parent's needs.
Right.
Not talked about, but that's the opposite. And sometimes it even feels good. It doesn't always feel bad. So examples are, I'll say in my case, my mom has a bad marriage with my dad, so instead she makes me the person she talks to about her life. So right. I'm like emotional, you know, the emotional husband. Or it might be maybe a parent is depressed. I remember I interviewed Jay Leno, the stand-up comedian and talk show host, and his mom was depressed, and he tried to cheer her up through jokes all the time, and that's how he became a comedian. For other people, maybe mom is full of anxiety and just you're under these strict rules, not because they make you a better person, but so she doesn't feel anxious. Whatever that is, the overbearing, overwhelming, or, you know, emotionally kind of depressed parent leads to enmeshment. And the consequence of that is in relationships, as soon as you start to get intimacy, you start to feel smothered again, like you're losing yourself and you want to escape. For some, that's through sex. For others, that's through work. But you'll find some way to escape.
Wow. So there's...
Right?
Yeah, very interesting. So also, though, I have to ask you a little bit about your past and maybe something else that you may have in common with the other people in the sex addict workshop.
Sure.
Or rehab, rather. Sure. And this had to do with something about your father that I read. And...
Right.
I'm wondering, I mean, it had to have been an unhealthy view of sex and love. Your father had a bit of a double life, as I recall.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's so interesting how you'll find these, you know, these certain patterns run in the family and whether they're passed on genetically or behaviorally, because we keep re-traumatizing the next generation, they show up again. So, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know how to talk about this, but I guess when I was a teenager, you know, I found literally like the skeleton in my family's closet. Yeah. I mean, this closet was literally the skeleton was not. I opened up the closet, I think I was looking for pornography, so, and unfortunately I got my wish, which was that my father had a bunch of videos and of women who were, I guess, handicapped in some way, whether they were missing a limb or just walking with a pronounced limp or missing all their limbs. And it didn't have to be, some of them were erotic, like things. Others were just literally like just a movie or a sport with people like this. And my mom is also handicapped. And all of a sudden I realized that, and it had hid this from my mom as well. She had found out as well. So I realized that a lot of the problems in my parents' relationship, again, there's nothing wrong with having a preference, but I think hiding who you are from a partner does not arrest your healthy intimacy. So I just realized that a lot of that my parents' negativity came from my mom thinking she's my dad's fetish object, my dad behind her back going to these clubs with, I guess, other guys where they trade photographs and images and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's weird. I mean, I think this, I don't know if this is true. It's probably true to some degree for everybody, but you think your family's normal, and at some point you either learn or you don't learn that there are these hidden secrets.
Neil, that's such a big topic, you know, and this whole family enmeshment, the topic of enmeshment and kind of where it leads and the roots that it goes to, and then what you just said about we all think that our families are somewhat normal, and then we find out that there is no such thing as a family that's normal. You know, we're all on some spectrum somewhere. And everything that, you know, I've been through a lot with my kids and my family, and it all leads back to your dynamic within the nuclear family and how things function or do not function. Are you functional or are you dysfunctional? And we're all dysfunctional to one degree or another, and some are highly dysfunctional, and it manifests in behaviors with the kids, and the parents think, you know, can you fix my kid? And it's really about fixing the family and the relationship, and it looks like that's where you have gone in truth.
Yes. Tim, you what you said just nailed it. It was so wise, and that's exactly it, and I think there's a message there, which is, people think it's this child and they're the black sheep and it's this person who's the bad one. But like you said, it's all a system and everybody's playing their roles within the dysfunctional family system. So it's often the child who's the black sheep who's the smartest one who realizes this family is kind of crazy and I'm opting out. So it can't just be one person going to therapy. And even for addicts, alcoholics, the whole family, everyone has to do work because it's all tied up together. I think that's a really great point. And then the second point he made is about, it's true, everybody's imperfect. We're all raised by imperfect people. Most imperfections get passed on to us. And I think the most fascinating thing I learned is, I thought, and I'm sure a lot of people listening may think this too, is I came from a normal family. Thank God nothing really horrifically abusive happened to me or my brother, and our parents loved us. But then if you start to understand deeper therapy, it's actually easier to recover, they say, from what they call a simple trauma, which is one traumatic thing happening or a couple traumatic things happening, versus complex trauma where a small thing is repeated every day by a parent, just a critical parent who's criticizing you every single day. That's really wired into your brain after 18 years of that.
Well, and so how do you... We only have a minute left, but how do you trick families into looking at themselves rather than looking out at their kids or however it may manifest, and, you know, placing the fix and the blame externally rather than looking internally at the family? Because that's a tough thing to do.
It's the toughest. I was saying the thing is the line and the truth, which is you can't expect the people who wound you to heal you. So if you're really lucky and have a self-aware family that really wants to do the work, that's great. But I'd say in over half the cases, the family's not going to want to look at themselves, and that's probably part of the problem. That you're dealing with some narcissism, or addiction, just an emotional immaturity in your family. So here's the shortest version of it. If you're traumatized by your family, you almost have to divorce them. I'm not saying not talk to them anymore, but set boundaries. So for me, with my mom, for example, she would always call to complain about my dad, and I called, and then I finally said, hey, this I want to have a great relationship. So I know you're have troubles there, but if you we speak about, you know, that, you need to talk to someone else, and I won't listen to it anymore. In a loving way, I said that. And if you talk about it, I'll just change the subject. If not, I'll hang up. And then you're not getting kind of re-traumatized. So you sort of divorce your family for those needs, and you get them met elsewhere by your family of choice, your close friends, or your close partners.
Mm. I think this is such an important book, and there's so many aspects of it that we haven't even touched on in our 20-minute conversation. So maybe we'll have to talk to you again sometime. But
Let's do it. You guys really get it. It's really fun to talk about it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The book is The Truth, An Eye-Opening Odyssey Through Love Addiction, Sex Addiction, and Extraordinary Relationships. And, you know, just a quick mention of the chapters, you know, you go through infidelity, exclusivity, alternatives to those. Anhedonia, tell me what that is.
Oh, anhedonia, it's almost like a cleaning out. Anhedonia is living without joy. It's like kind of cutting everything out. It's almost like they say it's
the opposite of hedonistic life. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And you need to clean that out. I think it takes, I did study something like 43 days. I could be wrong, to change a habit. So you want to just clean everything out, and you can start to rewire your brain, because a lot of this is about rewiring your brain. One last little point to just close on what you were saying earlier is then the other thing to start doing is stop being the bad parent to yourself in the head, talking to yourself negatively or being critical or being too hard on yourself, and be the good parent you never had to yourself.
Yeah,
I think that's another key.
That is a great point. Neil Strauss, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you both. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Bye.